Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Outlaw Picks podcast. So we'll chat a little bit about the Jan Błachowicz card, which was a lot of fun, and we'll talk about the fights this upcoming weekend. Holly Holm against Ketlin Vieira. First of all, quick shout out to our sponsors. So our good friends at Xbrain, xbrain.co.uk. You can use the code Outlaw and you'll get 20% off. That's the collagen that I use all the time. You've got your sleep optimizer and your total brain optimizer. So whether you're sleeping, you're working, you're recovering, whatever you need. And this as well, these are amazing.
Yeah,
this
really
is the mushroom tincture set. So with this, you'll get 6 different types of mushrooms that are all in their own little boxes. Each one of these has got a pipette like a dripper, and you can make your own concoctions with this. All the information's on the back as well as on the website. So depending on what you need, whether you're looking for recovery or focus, or you know, whether your brain's a bit foggy and you need to clear your head, this is the thing to go and get. So go on to xbrain.co.uk, use the code outlaw without the ED, and you'll get your 20% off all of this kind of stuff. And our friends at Canacarts UK. So if you go on to canacarts.uk, you can place yourself an order. You'll get one of these, the lanyard, the cartridge for it. Absolutely fantastic CBD. This is all made out of ceramic as well, so there's no plastic nastiness leaching into the good oil. And if you use the code OUTLAWCBD, you'll get £5 off your first order, and it's free shipping in the UK. So make sure you do that, canacarts.uk. And give them a follow on Instagram as well. Why not? How you doing, Jamie?
Yeah, all good, man. All good.
So we are discussing Błachowicz first and that card. Was there anybody else that stood out to you on that card?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Manuel Torres probably got one of the best knockouts I've seen this year. I
felt bad for Frank Camacho.
Yeah.
He's always there to trade, isn't he? You know what I mean? And he just seemed a little bit too slow and not quite as long enough for Torres. Like, didn't they come in at a similar height? But then Torres just looked so much longer.
Yeah, it was strange. Like, when I was writing up the stats, they were exactly the same, like, height and reach, I think, as well, even.
Yeah.
But yeah, Manuel Torres just seemed so much more longer in the striking range, like, able to land. And yeah, the finish was wicked. Like, slip. Was it a straight and then left hook?
Yeah.
Yeah, wicked.
Yeah, he's definitely one to keep an eye on. Definitely one to keep an eye on. Chikagian, and he had a really good fight.
Yeah.
That was a far more ferocious pace than I was expecting, to be honest. I thought it was going to be far more Chikagian on the back foot, using her jab and just kind of like slowing Hebus down as she was moving forward. But fair play to Amanda. I mean, she was there to make a point, wasn't she?
Yeah, especially in that last round, she just kind of unloaded.
Yeah. Screaming at one another.
Yeah, yeah. I think she was maybe trying to mimic Chikagian's, like, reminds me of, like, you know, tennis players, you know, when they hit.
Ah!
Yeah, yeah.
Ah! Yeah. Yeah, that would make sense. There's a lot of female fighters that make loads of noise. In fact, Holly Holm this weekend.
Yeah.
She's one of them. Davy Grant looked really good.
Mm-hmm.
He was just a little bit too over-enthusiastic in that first round, wasn't he? Because, I mean, like, so he landed 66 significant strikes in the first round. Came out in the second round and all of a sudden he was like, oh God. And Smolka's he just takes so many big shots. Smolka does. Yeah. I was impressed with Davy Grant. I think he gets better each time we see him out there. And the fact that he's one of the fighters that's using this switch stance footwork, it just gives him an advantage that a lot of other fighters I don't think have. Good to see Michael Johnson get a win as well.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. That was good. But yeah, like saying about Davy Grant, it's a shame he's had a bit of like, because he wasn't fighting that regularly, was he? If he was, I think he'd be a little bit further along in the division as well.
Yeah, and I think with a bit of with a bit more attention from the media, I think the fans will start to really like him as well. Because like as he was walking out, I think I said to V, I'm like, he is literally one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet in the sport of mixed martial arts. And then as soon as the fight started, I think one of the commentators said the same thing. He is just. He's just a super nice guy. You just wouldn't think that he wants to get in there and punch somebody as hard as he does.
Yeah, I seen a podcast. I think Mystery shared it on his story, and he was talking about like how much he loved just training to be hard as fuck. It was a really like cool little quote from him.
Yeah,
he like loves it as well. It's great.
No, I like the guy. I like the guy a lot. Ryan Spann impressed me as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
You predicted it exactly as it was going to go as well.
I didn't listen to it back. What did I say? Did I say pretty much the same as what happened?
Yeah, pretty much. He was going to cinch it up and then drop and, just
chase him to... It's just, I mean, you know, the thing is with Ryan Spann is that's kind of his thing. And because of the size and the style of Kutalaba, at some point he was going to end up close range with his head lower than Ryan Spann's armpit. It was just going to work out badly for him at some point, you know. I think Ryan Spann's an interesting one. I'd like to see him like gradually build some consistency, because I think he's got some skills that can be a real problem in this division. I just wonder whether, I mean, you know, he's ran into Anthony Smith and Johnny Walker, and they're the two that have kind of upset him in the UFC, but his wins have been impressive. You know, Serkanov, Kutalaba's a good win, finished Devin Clark, stopped Rogério Nogueira as well, Little Nog.
Yeah, he's...
I just don't know whether he's accelerated a bit too fast, you know what I mean?
Yeah. He's gone up, because I was just looking at the rankings now, and he's just gone above, he's number 12 now, above Johnny Walker.
Okay. So maybe that's a rematch to happen.
Yeah. Mm. I'd like to see him against... I don't know if Jamal Hill is probably looking a bit further up the division, but I think that would be a really good fight.
Yeah. Well, Jamal's just beaten Johnny Walker, hasn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
So that would make sense, because then if he got that fight against Jamal Hill and beats him, then it kind of it foregoes the need to beat Johnny Walker.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not, I mean, MMA math doesn't exactly work like that, but it would certainly make his ranking above Johnny Walker in the rankings more sense, given the fact that he's got a loss to Walker. But yeah, definitely someone to keep an eye on. What did you think to Rakic's knee?
Yeah, it was weird, wasn't it? Because you did see it pop like out the side. I don't know. Yeah, I felt a bit bad for him, really, because it might be something that might put him out for a little bit as well. Yeah. And like he was on a good like trajectory, and this was kind of a good opportunity to make his put his stamp on the division, really. But yeah, just unlucky, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, I wonder whether it was the damage that Jan had done to his lead leg, which had made him like drop his weight awkwardly onto his back leg, or whether Jan's low kick defense might have done it. Do you know what I mean? Like Rakic threw a lot of kicks and Jan was bouncing them off his shin bone. I don't know whether that may have affected his knee slightly. Yeah, unfortunate though. Good to see Jan get another win. But
yeah.
He's still in a very awkward position in this division. I think if Teixeira beats Prochazka, then that opens the door up for Jan, but I don't know. I kind of felt like Rakic was going to beat Jan, and then Prochazka is going to beat Teixeira, and that's going to kind of bring in the new wave of light heavyweights, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how it felt like it was going to work, but maybe the old guys are going to hang on for a little bit longer. Who knows?
Well, I could see now maybe Rakic, well, depending on like his recovery time, like him and Ankalaev maybe having the fight for the next title shot.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What about Jan? Who do you want to see him fight next?
Well, it's hard. I mean, really, like, BNC's ex-champion, like, you'd think he would get...
You think he'd get the rematch with the winner of the next one?
Yeah.
I mean, he could. He could, absolutely. Especially because there's nobody really like champion at the bit at light heavyweight to get a title shot. Let me have a quick look. I've got the rankings pulled up here. This computer's been incredibly slow today. Okay. Yeah, I mean, there's still some guys floating around like Anthony Smith and Thiago Santos and Dom Reyes. Like, there's still a few guys that you know. Let's see what Paul Craig does next. He's got a Uzdemir next, doesn't he?
Paul Craig?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Craig against Uzdemir. 8-9.
Yeah, it's a... Like I said last week, it's a bit of a weird division because there's kind of no, like... Besides, like, the top four or whatever, there's no really, like, Anthony Smith's already kind of been to the top and
Ankalaev is the one to be keeping an eye on, because I feel like he's the one that's next in line for a title shot in everybody's mind, especially if Rakic is going to be out for a while. So you've got the champion at the top, Glover Teixeira, then Jan right underneath him, and then Prochazka, who's fighting Teixeira, so that could all switch very quickly. Jan's held his position at number one, Rakic is sitting at number three, but then if he's out for 6 months dealing with a knee injury, then that might move him down the rankings and move a couple of people above him.
Mm-hmm.
Ankalaev is most likely going to be one of those people that moves up above him. And the winner of Paul Craig Uzdemir puts himself in a really interesting position as well.
Yeah, because if Paul Craig wins, that'll put him on a pretty decent streak as well, right?
Yeah, especially if he subs him.
Yeah.
Especially if he triangles him. I'd still like to see Paul Craig and Anthony Smith.
Yeah,
That's an interesting one. Just because I think, you know, Anthony Smith has got the ground game to force Paul Craig to strike a little bit more. I mean, Uzdemir might as well, but we've seen Uzdemir struggle on the ground with guys in the past, you know. I could see Paul Craig being able to beat Uzdemir on the floor, whereas Anthony Smith, I think, is a more competitive one.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it was a good card, man. It was a good card. There were a few
few
sleepers further down as well. Petroski looked strong.
Yeah, that surprised me, to be fair. Yeah, I thought he looked really good.
It's just a squeezy pot on. Like I think Maximov in most situations in that same position, he would have felt like he was going to be able to survive for at least another 30 seconds. But he was asleep fast, really quick.
Well, I've seen Petroski like training before that fight, like climbing up like two ropes.
Oh, was he?
In like the gym and. Yeah, he looks super, super strong.
Yeah. Yeah, well, shall we move on to the this weekend's card?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, right. So we'll have a quick look at the prelims, but then we'll move on to the main card. So we've got a few good fights lower down this one. So we've got six prelims, starting, according to Tapology, with Elise Reed against Sam Hughes. Now, I was impressed with Elise Reed against Corey McKenna.
Yeah,
I didn't think that she was going to be able to beat Corey McKenna just because, you know, McKenna impresses me every time she's out. Reed was coming off a loss to Sajara Eubanks. I kind of felt like Corey McKenna was going to be able to do the same thing to her. And she just wasn't. And then, you know, Sam Hughes, she's coming off a win, isn't she, against Stella Nunes? Yeah, like... I don't know. I mean, it's quite an evenly matched fight, I think, this one is. I don't really have a good read on either of them. I think Sam Hughes is tough, but I think, given what I saw from Elise in her last fight, I feel like she's got the advantage in this one.
Yeah, I think so as well. And the way she was using that like sidekick against Corey to kind of keep that distance away.
Yeah.
And Sam Hughes is very like forward pressure, like trying to put it on her.
Yeah. She is very square and very kind of,
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that.
Tough, but I think she'll get caught. And that overhand right Elise was using on McKenna as well as she was coming in.
Mm.
She might be able to catch her with that. It's like a really powerful shot as well.
Yeah, yeah. So Sam Hughes is actually the taller one of the two. She's 2 inches taller and she's got a 1-inch reach advantage. All the stats are off on this, of course, though, because Elise has not had many fights in the UFC. Yeah, 41% takedown offense for Sam Hughes, 25% takedown accuracy. I think she might want to try and grapple in this one a little bit, to be honest.
Mm.
Especially if she's able to get around that sidekick. But yeah, I think Elise Reed is one to keep an eye on. I think I just underestimated her coming in against Corey McKenna because I know Corey's really good. But yeah, 5-1 now going into this one. I think Elise Reed takes that one.
Yeah, I've got Elise on that one, yeah.
Yeah. Chase Hooper against Felipe Collares. Now Chase is he's almost there, isn't he?
Yeah.
I just feel like he could do with being put back in the oven for another couple of years.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He's just like he's 6'1" and 22 years old. He just doesn't have that kind of physicality that I feel like he needs in this division. Like there's some monsters at featherweight, some guys that are really physically capable. And Collares doesn't really move backwards. You know, I mean, he's, you know, was it Gutierrez he fought in his last fight?
Yeah.
Just
really put it on him.
Yeah, really put it on him. Constantly moving forward. Comfortable switching stances as well and was hammering kicks in. I feel like he's going to be physically the more imposing of the two. I think if it hits the floor, of course, Chase is, you know, that's where his skills show through. But I could quite easily see him getting just kind of walked down and beaten up a little bit, bullied a bit.
Yeah. See, when the, was it David Taymor Chase fought?
Mm.
Yeah, that was in his debut. And I thought every time I've seen Chase, there is that element of like, he doesn't look as physical or as strong, but he's got that kind of wiry, he's just got the length that he can just like wrap people up. And the Taymor finish was really good. Like went like the way he transitions from like back to like top position to top mount, and then he was like laying the ground and pounding. I thought he looked, he didn't look like he lacked strength.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he was able to get in the range where he can use his technique. His lack of strength does, it doesn't show through quite as much. But I think whenever he's put in a bad position, then his opponent physically looks far more dominant. I mean, you know, against Peterson, he was able to put him in bad positions. He was able to threaten him with things, but Peterson is just his toughness, his durability. I mean, Peterson coming into that one was 18-9, just like loads of experience. You know, he was a tough individual. He wasn't going to go away. I feel like he's got the same kind of problem with Kolaris, and I don't know whether the UFC is trying to test him to see whether he's ready or not for this level. But I mean, Kolaris, he may just walk him down and get wrapped up, as you said, and get subbed. But he may also be able to bully Chase Hooper.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, because I've not seen Chase since, because he last fought almost a year ago now.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
so he might have put on a bit of size, maybe in the gym, or just built up his strength a little bit.
Potentially. I mean, he's 22?
Yeah.
22. I mean, he's in the next few years, he's going to, if he keeps training, he doesn't get discouraged, he'll grow into a dangerous individual, I think. But at the moment, he just looks like you just shove him over.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Like, yeah, I don't know. Kolaris is 5 years older than him. But he is shorter. He has got a shorter reach as well. So, I mean, that, you know, the benefit here is that Kolaris has got to get close to him to hit him, which suits Chase Hooper if he wants to get his hands on him, which is the most likely thing to do. So 10-2-1 for Chase, 10-3 for Kolaris, 6-1 for Chase Hooper, 5-8 for Kolaris. So a decent height advantage, as well as a 5-inch in reach as well. And Chase being southpaw might just be problematic for him as well. But his takedown stats not wonderful. You know, 18% accuracy, but then 2.2 a submission average per 15 minutes. Yeah, I don't know. I want to pick Chase because I can see them building him into a real prospect. I just don't know. I just can't count Kolaris out. The way he fought his last fight, the way he just walked Gutierrez down. I mean, it was a split decision.
Yeah, it was those like body kicks as well that he was throwing, like really powerful. If he catches Chase with a couple of them, he might be able to just cripple him.
Even if he's kicking him on the arms and stuff, you know, it's. Which way are you going on that one?
I picked Chase.
Did you?
Yeah. I feel like he might. I can just see him getting a sub him. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We'll go Chase on that one. But I want him to get to that stage where he looks like he's not going to be bullied anymore.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
Like he reminds me a little bit of Wonder Boy in his like kind of, he's like in his mannerisms and stuff. He's very kind of like, he's not a brute. Like Wonder Boy's not a brute, but you wouldn't feel like you could bully Wonder Boy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Whereas I just feel like Chase is, he could do with like a couple more years, like 3 more years of developing, not to get rushed too much, you know, keep him down the bottom on the prelims, or even just, I mean, if he loses this one, I'd maybe think about releasing him. It's a shame that the UFC don't have a good partnership with another organization where they can kind of pass guys down to.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they've always got this, you know, everyone moves up from Cage Warriors or from LFA or wherever else, but there's not an organization where the UFC can go, okay, you need like 3 fights, go to this organization and they'll match you accordingly, and then we'll sign you if you pick up 3 wins. Like, they just kind of, this is why like they sometimes keep fighters longer than they should, because they don't want to release them, because then Chase signs to Bellator and he's the name that UFC wanted, and then he gets smashed by a couple of other guys. I like, if they could develop a relationship with Cage Warriors that works both ways, or like LFA would be a good one, or whoever, CFFC is the other one that's on Fight Pass all the time. Like, they could go, okay, go and get 2 fights. Go and take 6 months or 12 months and get a bit of experience and grow a little bit, age a little bit, and then we'll sign you back when you're more ready. That'd be a smart thing to do. Yeah. And I think Chase is one of those guys. I mean, they could have done the same to Sean O'Malley, but he was such a crowd draw that, yeah.
Was it, like, you know, the Contender Series?
Mm.
Obviously, that's only over a certain amount, and they only probably have, like, one, maybe two fights before they get into the UFC. Maybe if they just use that as, like, a season-long thing, and they just put a pool of fighters in there, and then whoever comes out on top afterwards, the next season they go into,
yeah, that'd be ideal. Yeah, that'd be ideal.
Because then they get, like, three or four fights against, like, good competitors that are coming up as well, you know.
Yeah, but guys that are not ready to kind of make a run.
Yeah,
for the
they
top
can
15.
Kind of grow together almost, mm. but then the best just make their way in.
Yeah, yeah. Interestingly, these two, so Chase and Kolaris are ranked on the Tapology ranking system, which includes everybody. They're ranked 84 and 85.
All right. Okay.
Although Kolaris is ranked at bantamweight, so is he moving up for this fight? That might swing things a little bit in... yeah, he is. His last form was at bantamweight.
Ah, right, okay.
Although, no, he beat Luke Sanders at featherweight. So he might be just a bit between. So lost to Montel Jackson at bantamweight. Beat Domingo Pilate at bantamweight. So he's had a couple of featherweight fights. He fought Gerardo de Freitas at featherweight in his debut as well. Okay, so maybe he's returning to... He had a bunch of featherweight fights in his... before he joined the UFC. Then he fought De Freitas at featherweight and lost. Then he went down to bantamweight and beat Pilate by split decision. Stayed at bantamweight and lost to Montel Jackson. Went back up to featherweight, beat Luke Sanders, and then went back down to bantamweight to fight Chris Gutierrez.
Yeah, he might have that power, though.
Yeah.
Because he did look, I mean, even against Sanders, he looked quite big, and that yeah. was at featherweight.
Yeah. Sanders is really short, though, isn't he? Sanders,
yeah, like yeah. really compact, short. Yeah.
He reminds me of Rorschach off Watchmen.
Oh,
the
yeah.
movie Watchmen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know what actor he plays in, but Luke Sanders looks just
yeah,
like him.
Yeah.
I mean, that might change things a bit. Maybe taking out some of that weight cut, because, you know, if he's losing decisions at bantamweight, it might be because he's, you know, he's not physically able to keep up a pace at that. But against Chase Hooper at featherweight, he might be able to. We'll go Chase.
Yeah,
we'll go Chase. We'll keep our prelim pick as Chase, but yeah, it could be a rough one for him, I think. Okay, this one's going to steal the show.
Yeah,
Jonathan Martinez against Vince Morales. There's no doubt this one's not going to steal the show. Like, Morales is an absolute warmonger. You know, I love his fights, and Jonathan Martinez is a lunatic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've established this on the show. The kid's a bit of a psychopath. Which way are you going in this one?
I picked Vince.
Did you? Yeah.
Yeah. I think, because I know both of them are just going to want to throw down.
Mm.
And I think if it is just that kind of fight, I think Vince has just got the slight power advantage
yeah.
on him. And if he catches him, I think he's more likely to knock him out.
Yeah. Yeah, Davy Grant caught Martinez good, didn't he?
Yeah,
with that
yeah.
switch hook.
Yeah.
I think Vince is a little bit, I mean, he's 4 years younger. He's a bit wiser. He's been in the UFC a little bit longer. He's got a bit more of a... He manages his pace a bit better, manages his range a bit better. Like, he's quite happy to move in and strike and then move out again, whereas Martinez, he's a bit... Okay, let's fight.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I think Morales might be able to have more success landing in this one. And Martinez might catch him on the way in, but I also think he's going to take those shots in the process. So 15-4 for Martinez, 11-5 for Morales. Martinez has got a 1-inch height advantage, but they've both got a 70-inch reach. Southpaw v. Orthodox, both got a really high striking output as well, 4.58 compared under 4.62. Not huge striking accuracy on Vince Morales' part, but again, like, this is where their stats are affected by their setup shots, because Morales will throw a shot to cover his distance as he's moving in, whereas Martinez walks himself into range, which is why most of his shots land.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, 73% takedown defense for Martinez.
Yeah, I can't really... Unless Martinez hurts Morales, I could maybe see him shooting for a takedown, but I
yeah.
think it's... I can really just see it either a knockout.
Just a kickboxing match,
yeah,
this
yeah,
one.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of a bit split, to be honest. I think this is going to be a fight of the night. It wouldn't surprise me if they both get knocked down and they you know, we get a round apiece going into the third. Mm-hmm. It could quite easily be a fight like that. I'm kind of seeing Martinez winning the first round. I think he might come out aggressive and enthusiastic and try and put it on him early. Like, keep a high pace, stay aggressive. But then Morales will kind of start to pull it back towards the end of the fight. Better quality shots, maybe not the volume.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Vince might take this one.
Yeah, Morales. Okay. Right. And another Morales. Omar Morales against Juros Medic. So Omar Morales is moving back up to lightweight.
Right, okay.
So he made his debut when he came into the UFC, he made his debut as a lightweight. I think he's been a lightweight all the way through his career. But he was undefeated coming into the UFC. Came off a first minute head kick knockout on Bellator. And then fought in the Contender Series, won a second round stoppage on that one over Harvey Park, and then made his debut against Dong Hyung Ma at lightweight. And he won his next one against Gabriel Benitez as well, and then went down a weight class, right? Yeah, then he went down and got Giga Chikadze in his next fight.
That's a tough fight, even at lightweight.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's not like he had much weight to lose either. I'm not really sure what his thought process was in that. I mean, I don't know whether featherweight's that much of an easier weight class than lightweight. I think lightweight's a deeper division. I think there are more guys at lightweight that are difficult to get around, but I think the guys at the top of featherweight are just as dangerous as the ones at lightweight these days.
Yeah, and like you said, he's not really got much to lose either, so he's probably cutting, or he's like getting rid of muscle maybe to make that weight.
He must have done. Picked up a win after that against Shane Young, and then went on to lose against Jonathan Pierce. So he's 1-2 as a featherweight, and that last one was a submission loss. I mean, maybe that's the reason he's just kind of thought, I'll try it. It didn't work out. I mean, he's still undefeated as a lightweight, and I think this is a very winnable fight for him. I think Medic is good, but he's a very, very quick starter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, if you look at Morales' record, Omar Morales' record, like, he can work to a decision. You know, he can win points and fight to a decision. Whereas Medic, I don't know whether he might start to come unraveled a little bit if it starts to go deeper. I mean, he's been into the second round a couple of times. I don't know, just once into the second round, but that was a 51 seconds of the second round.
Yeah, it's all of his fight. I mean, his last fight against Jalen, he got a little bit overwhelmed, didn't he? I know that was a first round for Jalen, but he's got a little overwhelmed in the striking. Then when it went to the ground, I mean Jalen Turner is really good anyway. I'm pretty high on him.
Yeah,
but
and he's awkward given his reach and his height as That's something that that he's not going to get from Omar Morales. Let me have a quick look at the stats, see where we're at. I was surprised when Morales went down. I just thought to myself, this is going to take away from his performance because he's going to have to, like you said, he's going to have to lose some muscle mass. He's going to have to really cut hard to make featherweight. So I'm actually glad. I mean, he's 5'11". So 11-2 for Morales, 7-1 for Medic. 5'11 for Morales and 6'2 for Medic. So it's a couple of inches in height for Medic. A couple of inches in reach for Morales, though, at 73 inches. Ridiculously high striking output for Medic, but of course, you know, he's not been around for very long, so that stat's way off. Decent takedown accuracy from Omar Morales. I'm not sure how many takedowns he's actually attempted in the UFC, but his accuracy is 100%. I mean, it might be an option for him to, you know, to come in and like take it to Medic and take him down and control him.
Yeah, I think Omar's got to be pretty patient because, like you said, judging by Medic's his quick starter, and I feel like if Omar rushes in too early, he might be able to snatch a triangle or something.
Yeah.
But I think if he makes the fight his own pace and just keeps Medic off and just wears him down, I think he'd be able to beat him to a decision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think he'll be able to take his shots better. I think Morales will be able to take Medic's shots better in upper weight class.
Yeah, yeah.
Like if this was Morales as a featherweight, I'm not seeing him winning the fight. But given the fact that he's able to go back up to 155, I think he's going to be physically able to take those shots better.
Yeah.
I'm taking Morales by decision in this one. I think he might be able to drag Medic into the later rounds.
Yeah, I got Morales.
Have you?
Yeah, I think, like I said, if he makes the fight at his pace and just slowly, maybe not overwhelming, but just slowly like wear on him over the distance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you look down the guys that Medic just fought. You look at their records, and I mean, he's not fought guys with loads of experience. You know, a lot of the guys that he's fought have had like sort of 3, 4, 5 fights. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, he's a very explosive kid, but I think Morales back at 155 is the place where he needs to be.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, Parker Porter against Jailton Almeida, Jailtown.
I mean, judging off Jailton's last fight, I just think he'll be like way too powerful and quick for Parker Porter.
It's going to be a fast takedown straight away.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you're Porter, you want this one on the feet, don't you? You want to keep this one standing and you want to try and outbox him and stuff his takedowns. The challenge is going to be avoiding getting taken down. And you know, even though it's obvious what Almeida wants to do in his fights, he's still able to do it.
Yeah, it's like being able to prevent that. Even though you know it's coming, it's like prevent it. It's another thing.
Yeah. I mean, on his contender series, he was shooting pretty much off the bell. He did the same thing against Danilo Marquez, walked out and immediate level change. I expect the same thing from him in this one. I don't know whether Parker Porter is gonna have much success in defending his takedowns, but if he's able to defend a couple, keep it on the feet, that's when he starts to bring it into his range. I mean, height and reach advantage for Almeida as well is going to make it difficult for him on the feet. But you know, Parker Porter's a 6 foot heavyweight. You know, he's used to fighting guys that are bigger and taller and longer than him. You know.
I just feel if Jailton gets that first takedown, I find it hard for Parker Porter to get back up after it.
Yeah.
I think he's going to struggle getting back to his feet if he gets taken down. And I can just see Jailton just like landing bombs like from top position.
The other thing with this one as well is Jailton's going up to heavyweight to fight him.
Yeah, because I thought he was a light heavyweight on his first fight, wasn't he? Yeah,
yeah. Danilo Marquez was light heavyweight against Nasruddin on Contender Series. It was a light heavyweight as well. But it's not like he's undersized. I mean, you know, he's got the height and reach advantage. 3 inches in height, 4 inches in reach. Yeah. I think he's going to take him down and dominate him, to be honest. I think Parker Porter's going to look out of his depth here. You know, you go down Parker Porter's record and you know he got stopped by Daukus. That was really, really slick striking by Daukus. But you go further down and he's got an arm triangle loss and, you know. Yeah. I think Jailton's going to have too much for him. I think that's going to be a submission or maybe a TKO finish from ground and pound.
I think so.
Yeah. Okay. Where are we? So Joseph Holmes against Alan Amadovsky. So Amadovsky, he came into the UFC on short notice, if I remember correctly. And he fought Jotko in his debut, which of course is an incredibly difficult fight to take, especially in your debut. And he had all kinds of travel issues as well, if I remember right, because he made his debut in Fight Island. So when he was coming in, he got stuck at the airport and he had to start his weight cut at the airport.
Oh, shit.
I remember that being a topic when he was coming into fight week, is that he'd not, like, it's never ideal.
Yeah,
that was the thing, is the situation's never ideal for him. Like, he's not won a fight in the UFC yet, has he?
He came in undefeated, didn't he, off Bellator?
Yeah, and stopping guys as well, you know, first and second round stoppages. But then lost a unanimous decision to Jotko and then got stopped by John Phillips at 14 seconds. I mean, that's John Phillips for you, though. Yeah. He's got ridiculous power in his hands. And then he's had a bunch of cancelled fights. Bevan Lewis and Hu Yao Zong twice. And now he's got Joseph Holmes. Let's have a quick look at the stats on this one.
Oh, so he's had like quite a while out as well, like 18 months or so since that John Phillips fight.
Yeah, that's not ideal, that. Especially if you're coming off a loss. That kind of haunts you for the time that you're away. So 6'4" compared to 5'10" for Joseph Holmes, and he's got an 80-inch reach, so he's got a 6-inch reach advantage as well. Like Amadovsky, he looks to me like a welterweight, you know what I mean? He looks like he's in the wrong weight class, and I think Joseph Holmes is going to make it look like that as well.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's just going to be like way too big for him. And because Joseph Holmes' first fight was against Jamie Pickett, I think he's got like equally length reach, like 80-inch reach.
Yeah.
So I feel like now he can use that reach advantage to his advantage in this fight. He'll just be able to like keep him at distance, pick him off, maybe get a finish even.
Yeah. I think his striking is going to be overwhelming.
Yeah.
I think it is. And, you know, you look down his record as well, and it's, you know, he's beating people up until they turn and give their back, and then he's choking them out. It wouldn't surprise me if we get a first-round rear naked choke here.
Yeah.
You know, I could see him, because, you know, Amadovsky's been out for a while. You know, he's got that, he'll have those, you know, those jitters from being out for so long, plus he's coming off two losses, you know, and he was an undefeated fighter coming into the UFC. So this is not playing out the way that he expected it to. And then Joseph Holmes is going to look massive by comparison. I think he's going to be on the end of his strikes until he tries to rush in and close distance. And then we might see Joseph Holmes take his back in the scramble and choke him out.
Yeah.
I think Rennie could choke from Joseph Holmes in this one.
Yeah, I got Joseph Holmes as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, way too big for him.
It's a massive, massive reach and height, isn't it, that? 6'4" compared to 5'10" and a 6-inch reach advantage. Jeez. Okay, main card time. Right, so we've got 5 fights on the main card. So we're starting off with Eric Anders against Jun Yong Park, the Iron Turtle. It's a great nickname, that is.
So I think this could be a bit of a banger as well, like maybe potentially fight of the night.
Yeah.
If it doesn't finish too early. Because I can see, because both of them like to swing, but I think Eric Anders is a little bit more calculated with his power.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like Jungsun Park, his last fight against Gregory Rodriguez.
Yeah, he's a little bit wild.
Just both swinging, and it was like whoever lands first, I guess.
Yeah. But he did show some improvements with his ground game though, against, was it John Phillips?
Ah, right, yeah.
Yeah. I think against Barry and John Phillips we saw some grappling from him, but definitely against John Phillips. I was surprised how much grappling he used. I think he was working a lot on his judo, and he was just holding top position and working ground and pound. Like, I could see him doing that here. I think it's going to be difficult to get Eric Anders down initially, because I think he's a big physical athlete. And Anders is one of those guys that drifts between two weight classes.
Yeah.
Which I always find kind of weird, because when he's at light heavyweight, he looks like a light heavyweight. But then when he comes down to middleweight, I'm like, how is he making this weight class?
It's like just this part goes to the middle section. Because he doesn't check, like, he's got a massive frame. It's just his stomach goes down.
Just shrinks in a little bit.
But yeah, I watching Eric Anders against, who was it against?
He's had a couple against Darren Stewart recently, hasn't he? Yeah. Oh, he lost to Muniz in his last one by armbar, didn't he?
Yeah, like the Mershot fight.
Slick. Yeah.
Like he was good in the wrestling exchanges. Like his takedown defense was really good. So I feel like if he can avoid that from Jung as well and keep it on the feet, I think he might be able to, yeah, like win those striking exchanges.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, Park's a lot of fun to watch, but he is hittable, and he is a little bit reckless. And I think Eric Anders, you know, he's a much more physical athlete than Jun Yong Park, which means, you know, regardless of where he takes the fight, I think he's going to be able to have the physical advantage, grappling or striking. And if Park decides he wants to grapple, he's going to have to invest a lot of time and energy and be consistent and not get discouraged if he doesn't get the first takedown. Because, you know, I do think, I mean, I underestimate Park. I always do, because he's a very unassuming guy. You know, he makes fun of his own voice in his post-fight interviews and stuff. He's a really interesting dude. But I don't know whether if he has a rough first round, I don't know whether he starts to kind of come unraveled a little bit. Right. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think if you're going to beat Eric Anders, you need to be confident that you're going to get a takedown regardless of how many you fail to begin with. And I don't know whether we're going to see that from Jun Yong Park. I could see him trying a couple of takedowns and hitting this like wall of muscle and being like, oh no, this is, now I've got to stand and trade with him. And then the unraveling goes into like a reckless, well, let's just hope I land first.
Yeah.
You know,
I feel like that's what happened in the Gregory Rodriguez fight as well. It's like he found out that he could no way beat him on the ground. So he just resorted to swinging, yeah. seeing yeah. if he lands.
Yeah. I could definitely see that the fight playing out the same way. Yeah. Did I go through stats?
No.
So 14-6 with one no contest for Eric Anders, 13-5 for Jun Yong Park, 6-1, so a decent height advantage and a 2-inch reach advantage for Eric Anders as well. And, you know, this is the weight class for him at 185. If you can make it, do. Relatively even as far as striking accuracy and defense goes, but the striking output of Jun Yong Park is higher. But then that's probably down to that John Phillips fight where he took him down and was able to throw a lot of shots on the ground. 2.6 is average takedowns for Jun Yong Park compared to 1.4 for Eric Anders. But Anders has a 74% takedown defense compared to Park, who's 47. Yeah. I think this is a win for Anders, to be honest. But I can't underestimate Park. I question his enthusiasm if he starts losing the fight.
Yeah.
I don't know, like you said, against Rodriguez, when he realized he wasn't going to be able to beat him on the floor, it was like caution to the wind and let's just hope something lands.
Yeah, I like Jungsun Park's like hunger as well. Because like, he was, when we were at Fight Island, I think he was one of the guys to call out Hamzat as well, like early stages of Hamzat.
Yeah.
And yeah, he wanted to fight him. And I don't know how that'd go now, obviously, but...
I don't think you call him out now.
Nah, true. But yeah, I got Eric in this one.
Yeah.
I think if he can negate that takedown, I think he's just got the power and the striking ability to probably get the finish, maybe.
Yeah. I wonder if he stayed consistently in one weight class and made it his focus, whether he'd start to get some momentum. So I think moving up and down, it always keeps the fans kind of confused as to what's going on, you know?
Yeah.
Like, where do you belong? Okay, next one up. Pollyanna Viana against Tabitha Ricci. Now, Ricci reminds me, and we mentioned this before because I couldn't remember her name, she reminds me of Lupita Godinez, who fought Carnelosi a couple of weeks ago. She just doesn't seem to have the same wrestling level that Godinez has. And I think that she would need it against Viana. Viana's ground game is slick. You know, she's coming off two armbar wins.
Yeah, I think she's finished rounders. Every one of her fights as well. Yeah. Or every one of her victories.
Yeah. All submissions aside from a couple of TKOs. I mean, I think this is a fight for Viana to win, to be honest. I think she picks up another submission here. I think Richie's, she's got potential, but she comes in undersized against almost everybody. I mean, 5'1", you know, she's always looked very, very small. And she doesn't have that Lupita Godinez wrestling to back up her stature. And even if she did take Viana down, I still think that won't work out too well for her.
Yeah, was Tabitha's debut, it was against Firo, wasn't it? And I think she was...
Yeah, she came in, shit beaten out of her. Yeah, was that short notice, that one?
That was short notice, because she stepped in at flyweight.
Yeah,
so
that's
so she was, like, super undersized, like, just looked really small against Firo.
Yeah.
But then in her next fight, she came back in at strawweight, and she did look... She looked a lot better, like, a lot more comfortable at that weight.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can just see her... shooting in on Viana and Viana getting a submission of some sort. Yeah.
It's going to be an armbar, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, the thing is, so she came in on that fight against Manon Firo on short notice, but she'd had a decent record up to that point. She'd been doing a lot of custom rules stuff. I was just having a look at her record earlier. So she was 4-0 as a MMA fighter coming into... the Manon Furrow fight, maybe 5-0. But then she's got a bunch of like custom rules custom rules fights as well, which I don't know exactly what those custom rules would be.
Were they in Brazil?
It looks like, no, it looked like they were in Japan. She was fighting, and I mean, the referee was Yuji Shimada, so it was almost definitely in Japan. I don't know whether that was some kind of like, the event was called Caesar, and it was on an open mat. Yeah, I wonder whether
the poster's really weird as well.
Yeah, I wonder if it was some kind of grappling event, because it does. I mean, it doesn't look like it was a. It doesn't look like there was any striking involved.
Yeah, it looks like Tarantino stylized poster.
Yeah,
for fighting.
But so she's got experience. It's just not all MMA experience. I just think she's outmatched here. I really do.
She's got quite good. Is she a black belt, Tabitha Ritchie? Has she got good grappling?
I'm not sure, background. To be honest. We'll have a look. But there's grappling. I mean, you know, like Viana's won. Was she like a 14-time jiu-jitsu champion or something? I just don't know whether the thing is, in order to nullify her jiu-jitsu, she would have to have decent wrestling. She would have to have Lupita Cadena style wrestling, and she just doesn't. She's got wrestling, you know. She does score takedowns, but it's not the same. It's not the same level as what she'd need, and her jiu-jitsu is not going to be the same level as. No, I'm not finding anything. I don't know, to be honest.
Yeah, it's just because in a Tapology photo, she's in the gi.
Yeah.
I assume if normally that she'd have a good background if a Tapology photo is like that.
Maybe she's just punking us. Oh, she's got her own website. So what does it say here? I wonder why her nickname's Baby Shark.
Yeah, she fights out of Paragon Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Yeah. Let's see. I wonder who else is on our team if we recognise anybody. I mean, Paragon have been around for a while. They must have a few fighters on the their roster. Oh yeah, I've got Bill Cooper, Bill the Grill Cooper. My goodness, he's not fought for a long while. So he was on the grappling scene back when I was training at 10th Planet back in the day. Boom, Bill Cooper was a good grappler, really good. So.
Yeah, it's because there's always like that thing, because I think in both of her fights, she's not really had, I mean, against Oliveira, she just kind of held her down. It's like good ground and pound.
Yeah.
But I don't know if she's had the opportunity really to show her jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
So there might be.
Yeah, there might be. You know, there might be something that we've not seen in a game. I just think the level at which she's going to be competing. I mean, you know, like you said, she was able to take down Maria Oliveira, and she was able to work ground and pound. But I feel like if you put Viana in that same fight against Oliveira, she'd have subbed her in the first round. You know what I mean? I think Viana's going to sub her here.
Yeah, I've got Viana for the win. Yeah, submission.
First round armbar.
Yeah,
three in a row. It makes sense. It makes sense.
Has anyone ever done that? Three arm bars in a row?
Oh, I bet they have. The fighter that Ricky Hatton mentioned the other day when we were over there training was Paul Sass. And Paul Sass used to fight out of Liverpool. And he was known for his triangle. And it was like the Sass angle, as he called it. But he was, I mean, he would catch everybody with it, and they knew it was coming as well. So here we are. Check this out. I've just pulled up his Wikipedia page. So, I mean, his last fight was 2013, so he's been retired a little while now. But he went 7-0 with 7 triangles.
Jeez.
6 in the first round, 1 in the second round. Then he won his next fight by heel hook. Then he fought Rob Sinclair, who's a good fighter. Split decision on that one. Then he went another heel hook, then back to triangle, then inverted heel hook against Michael Johnson, then a triangle armbar against Volkman. Then he lost 2 fights. He lost to Matt Wieman and Danny Castillo, and then he won one on Bellator by toehold. But like, I mean, you look at that, and it's not like he was fighting nobodies in those first 6 fights as well. Like his So his fourth fight was Martin Stapleton. And his fifth fight is Andrew Fisher, who's one of the coaches for Emma. So,
he got
you know,
a win last week.
Yeah, he did. He looked good as well, yeah. Like, he's not, you know, like, these guys knew what he was going to do. They were fully prepared to defend his triangle and still couldn't. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like that inevitable trying to stop it, but you can't.
You can't.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That's incredibly impressive, that is. The first seven fights by triangle. Only one in the second round. Amazing. Yeah, I think we're going for... I think we're going to see an armbar against... from Viana. Okay. Now, this is I think this is going to be a really short fight, this.
But
Chidi Njikwani against Dusko Todorovic.
Yeah, I think it's a really tough fight for Dusko.
I do.
Really tough.
Especially because he likes to use his head movement to avoid shots, and Njikwani is lethal.
Yeah.
Lethal.
I think it's a really good time for Chidi to come into the UFC as well, because he's already got like bags of experience, hasn't he? And he seems to be at that point in his career now where, because before he came in, was he on like a 3-fight losing streak? And then since he's been in the UFC, he just seems to have like found his rhythm.
Yeah, so he was on Bellator and he lost, he lost 3 fights in Bellator. He did win a couple, but he lost, he lost to Korshakov by ground and pound. He lost to Salter by rear naked choke, and then he lost to Carvalho by decision. But then he came off that knee to the body on LFA before he went on the Contender Series. Like, he's got good wins on his record as well. I mean, you know, he's beat Andre Fiallo, he's beat Melvin Gallard.
Max Griffin.
These are good wins on his record. I feel like Dusko went all the way through, because he had a good amateur career as well, didn't he? He was undefeated as an amateur, like 11 fights or something as an amateur. I feel like Dusko came in with, I've got a great ground game, so you're not going to try and grapple with me, and I'm just going to strike. And then he played that game with everybody. And then he started to come undone a little bit for him. I mean, he got caught by Soriano a few times, and he got dropped a couple of times pretty bad in that one. And then he came in against Rodriguez and just couldn't deal with his range and with his striking. Like, of course, he looked good against Maki Pitolo, but I felt like that kind of allowed him to return back to what he was originally very good at.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if he's going to be able to get close to Njikwani here. I feel like Njikwani is going to be able to stuff his takedowns if he does go for them, because they are a bit sloppy. And I feel like he's very, very hittable.
Yeah. The thing is with Chidi as well, I watched one of his was it CFC fights, and he's catching people with guillotines as well. Like, I feel like if Chidi's like getting the better of him on the feet and Dusko shoots, he could always catch him in something like that even. But
especially if he's hitting with a couple of good shots as well.
Yeah.
Like caught him with a couple of knees in the clinch, because that's another range that he's really dangerous at.
Yeah, I think this is, like you said, going to be a short fight.
Yeah.
And Chidi's probably going to get a finish here.
Yeah. Let me just have a quick look at the tail of the tape, the stats. So 21-7 with one no contest for Njikwani, 11-2 for Todorovic. 2-inch height advantage for Chidi and a 6-inch reach advantage. Yeah, that's going to be ridiculous. Oh, it's Todorovic's birthday tomorrow.
Oh, is it? How old is he?
94, so he'll be 27?
Seven, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and Njikwani's, he's 6 years younger than me.
Well, I think his experience as well, like...
Yeah.
He's been pro since, like, 2007 as well, Chidi. Yeah. Like, he's got a lot of experience, and like I was saying, I think it's a really good time for him to come into the UFC. Like, is it his like peak?
Mm, yeah, there were a lot of people aware of him because of his brother Anthony Njikwani was in the UFC a few years ago. It was also a lethal striker. But yeah, like Chidi seems to be a much more well rounded individual, and the size of him for this weight class as well, height and reach at middleweight. 6'3 and 80-inch reach. He's not going to be undersized against anybody in this weight class. He's got the striking skills to compare with the top guys in the division already. It depends on, you know, on you know, whether anyone can challenge his ground game. Like 78% takedown defense, of course, that's limited to the few fights that he's had. But then Todorovic is on 9% takedown accuracy. So it's going to be very difficult for him to get close to him and get him taken down. And I think if he does close Chidi down, I think then he's in tie clinch range.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's when he gets clinched and kneed, and then he level changes into a guillotine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've got Njikwani in that one as well.
Yeah, same. Yeah, I think as well, like, because he's experienced losses at this point in his career as well, I think that kind of takes away, like, someone like Dusko, who came in undefeated, never experienced that loss, or, you know, and Chidi's gone through that and he's experienced it, so he's a bit more,
yeah.
It just takes that element of fear away a little bit, I think.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Dusko's dealing with picking up those first losses in the UFC as well, which is, you know, even more difficult. It's much easier to pick up a loss and deal with it, you know, on your drive home from Cage Warriors and be like, God, I'm annoyed about that. But then this is worldwide and everyone's paying attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're right. Chidi's arriving at the right time. You know, 7 losses on his record, but a massive amount of experience in martial arts as well. Like, he's going to be fully prepared to put it on Dusko. And he's going to make the most of Dusko trying to use his head movement to get away from shots. And you've got to think as well. I mean, we've talked about Marc-Andre Barrio before. Like, he's one of those, like, the benchmark tests in the division, like a Mershaw or someone like that. 16 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
16 seconds. And he knew that shot was going to land. The way he walked himself into range, he's like, yeah, okay, bang.
Yeah,
it's a slickness of striking that you don't see very often in the UFC, and it's good that he's in middleweight as well, because obviously we've got Adesanya up there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the one I'm keeping my eye on still is Andre Muniz, though. He's the middleweight that I'm most interested in,
because
he's the one out of all of them that I feel could just go the entire opposite way and sub everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everybody's a striker now, you know, everybody wants striking and takedown defense, but then you've got this guy that climbs up your back and steals your arms.
Yeah
He's an interesting one. But Chidi is, like, as far as the middleweight division goes right now, he is perfect for this division.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he picks up a win here over Todorovic. And I think he moves on to a higher ranked opponent after that.
I feel like there's a lot of exciting fights for Izzy potentially in the middleweight as well. Like, guys like Chidi and Muniz, but also Alex Pereira's. I think he's fighting on the Izzy card.
Oh, is he? Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's co main event.
Okay.
So that's a storyline within that as well, obviously.
Mm.
Yeah, I think middleweight's looking pretty exciting at the minute.
Yeah.
Some good guys coming up.
I wonder if we'd see Pereira against Njikwani.
Oh, yeah, that'd be
a good fight. That'd be one for Adesanya to sit on the sidelines and watch. Yeah. I wonder whether he'd rather fight someone like that, or whether he'd rather, like, You look at Robert Whittaker, who's a striker with good grappling, or you look at Marvin Vettori, who's a grappler with decent striking. I wonder if Izzy finds it easier to fight one of those guys who's got more of a spread out skill set than someone that's really good at one thing like he's good at.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, that's why I'd love to see the Pereira fight again.
Yeah, Izzy in small gloves.
Yeah. The power of Pereira as well.
And the size of him as well. Mm-hmm. You know, he's physically a huge dude. Like, when he fought Artem Vakhitov in K1, and Vakhitov was the light heavyweight champ, he was the one that looked smaller.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good division to be a middleweight striker at the moment. I'm just having a quick look at the rankings now. Who else have we got? I mean, you know, you're looking for a path through the top 15 for Njikwani, and, you know, you're looking at people like Shabazzian and Brad Tavares, and, I mean, Uriah Hall would be a great fight. I'd love to watch him fight Darren Till. Sean Strickland, I'd like to see him fight Strickland, especially because I feel like he could wrap his foot around Strickland's head, and that'd be fun to watch. lots of good fights for him. Lots of good fights for him. We'll see how he deals with the grappling of Todorovic, because it'd be foolish for him to try and stand and trade with Njikwani, and I think he might know that.
Yeah.
We might see a more driven grappling game from him, which would be probably a good thing. So yeah. Are we both going with chili on that one?
Yeah, I got chili in that one, yeah.
Chili, chili, bang, bang. Okay, co-main event. Santiago Ponzinibbio against Michel Pereira.
I think this could potentially be fight of the night as well.
Yeah.
Not so much just because I think it would be a crazy fight. Like the pace of Ponzinibbio. I mean, I feel like he has like slipped off a little bit just in terms of his pace and his output.
We had all that time off, didn't he?
Yeah, he was like that life-threatening.
Yeah.
Illness he had, or
yeah.
I can't remember what it was, some kind of infection. But yeah, since he's come back, I mean, there was glimpses of it in the Miguel Baeza fight, just like that forward pressure, just constant wearing people down. But I feel like someone who's like as busy, but in a different way, like Pereira, I think he might. Yeah, it's going to be a fun fight for sure. But I feel like Pereira might be able to do what he did against the Fiajo fight.
Okay.
Like push him away, keep him away, and then just maybe do that over the distance.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I could see that. I prefer this smarter version of Pereira, and I think he's a more difficult person to deal with for his opponents. The thing with Ponzinibbio is that he's made a career off having a really, really good 1-2. Like he's got a very, very quick jab, and he's got very, very straight punches, and he uses the full length of his arm as well. I mean, whenever you see him throwing a jab, you see fully extended out. My thought is in this one, he might just be able to kind of keep Pereira up against the fence and keep touching him, bang, bang, bang. Just keep pressuring him. And any time Pereira starts to kind of build into something where he's going to like leap or jump, you're just going to see Santiago just keep jabbing him on the nose. And he tends to punch up as well. He tends to be quite low and ramp his body up. So I could see him. I mean, he's going to be susceptible for flying knees. That's my concern for him, because he is kind of low. He just kind of leave his chin hanging low. But I feel like he's got the technical skills to nullify Pereira in this one. Like, I like watching Pereira because he's a bit of a wild card, but I would much rather watch someone that's got really, really good basics. And in the Baeza fight, we did see it. I mean, of course, Jeff Neal, we didn't, but that was a split decision. Jeff Neal is a, you know, a highly respected welterweight. I feel like Ponzinibbio might have Pereira's number here.
Yeah, I did watch the Ponzinibbio Magny fight as well. Mm-hmm. And like the way he just stalked him all the way along the cage for pretty much the whole fight until he got the finish. I feel like if he can just like close that distance and take away the length of Pereira, he might be able to do that.
Like if I'm Ponzinibbio going in there against Pereira, my intention is to be uncomfortably close to him all the time. Because someone like Pereira needs the explosion and the wildness to create power. I would want to be smothering that as much as possible and keep hitting him with the jab so he feels like he's trapped up against the fence. And if he's going to do something, it's going to be something big, flying, explosive, so I can either see it and get out of the way or just smother it straight away before he even starts. Like Pereira is similar in some ways to Johnny Walker.
Yeah.
Like when people see him move, they give him space because he is explosive. And because they've seen him land, you know, wild stuff like that, that knee landed on Danny Roberts. Like I could see him landing that quite easily on Ponzinibbio. If Ponzinibbio's smart, though, as soon as he sees him move, he just moves straight into it and smothers it and stops him gaining that momentum. And that takes some confidence, which I know that we get from Ponzinibbio. But it's we've got to see a performance like the Magnify, really. We've got to see him do that. Otherwise, he's going to be. I could see that flying knee catching him on the chin.
The one thing I really liked in Pereira's last fight as well against Fiallo was that like teep. Front kick was just keeping that. And it was just like every time he was pushing forward, just keeping him back.
Yeah.
If he could do that, I feel like that would be really useful against Ponzinibbio with his style of like pushing forward.
Mm-hmm. And Fiallo must be a similar kind of height and reach to Ponzinibbio as well, right? Must be a very similar... Let's have a quick look at the stats. I still call bullshit on Ponzinibbio being... On Pereira being in his 20s.
Oh, mate.
There's no way.
He's 2 years younger than me.
No chance. There's no way.
Guy looks like my uncle or something, yeah.
It's crazy. He looks like an extra out of a get-up, like a gang movie. It's, you know what I mean? Like some old school mafia bosses.
Yeah. It's like that kid at school that's like brought in to play for the football team. He's like 3 years older.
Yeah, like, nah. Yeah. He's the ringer on the baseball team that's yeah. smoking a cigarette and like, hang on a minute, you're supposed to be nine. So 29-5 for Ponzinibbio, 27-11-2 no contests for Pereira. 1 inch reach advantage for Pereira, but the 1 inch height advantage, but the reach is the same. Very similar striking output. Both of them have got a high striking output, 4.7. Takedown offense is 100% for Michel Pereira. I don't expect Ponzinibbio to really want to grapple with him too much, but it might be worth him clinching him just to tie him up against the fence, but not worth grappling with him on the floor. I'm going to go Ponzinibbio on this one.
Yeah,
I am. I'm going to, because there was a point when Ponzinibbio, everyone was like, okay, he's going to be a champion soon. And then he just had all kinds of issues, didn't he? I mean, he was lined up to fight Kamaru Usman back in 2018 before he beat Magny. And he was pulled out of that one due to a hand injury. Then he was due to fight Robbie Lawler, and he was pulled out of that one as well. Then he was due to fight Muslim Salikov, and that was Salikov where he withdrew. He's had some bad luck recently.
Yeah, it's sad because those 2 years out, like, he was at that peak, and then the age, I suppose that those 2 years, like, adds 2 years to your age as well.
For
and
sure.
if you've had issues with like illness and stuff, it's,
yeah, I mean, they weren't a healthy 2 years.
No, like, exactly.
He was on his deathbed at one point. Mm. 35 now compared to Michel Pereira, who's, what is he, 28? Bullshit.
19.
There's no way. 28. There is no way he was born in 96. I just don't buy it. I would need to see a birth certificate yeah. to believe that. And I still might question it. Yeah, no, I'm gonna go Ponzinibbio on this one.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Ponzinibbio is gonna just walk him down for 15 minutes and jab his face off, and Pereira is gonna look rather stifled.
I'm going for Pereira.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. If he can keep that distance, and then maybe get something explosive, like a flying knee or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. I think it's going to be a really fun fight, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That flying knee is going to be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. Just because of the way that that Ponzinibbio stands. He's you know what I mean? Mm. He kind of leans over. It's good for him to utilize his long-range punches, but bad at the same time for flying knees. Jeez, that Fiao's fighting again soon. Andre Fiao is fighting Jake Matthews on 275.
Oh, is he?
He's staying busy, isn't he?
Jeez, yeah.
Two first round finishes, that's why.
Yeah, I think because Fiao was really good. Like, in his last two fights, looked really good.
Mm.
And Pereira managed to stay in there and kind of negate what he had to offer. So,
yeah. Yeah. Okay, so we're going opposite ways on that one then. All right. Main event, Holly Holm against Ketlin Vieira. So Holly Holm, of course, former champion. Ketlin Vieira is most definitely on her way up to the belt. The question around this one for me is whether Holly Holm's like smart and wise and experienced enough to not allow Ketlin Vieira to get this win over her. I can see Vieira winning fights against almost everybody in this division, but I feel like someone like a Holly Holm has got the skills and the experience to be, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Basically what she did against Irene Aldana.
Yeah.
Like, moved away, side kick her, move away, side kick her, jab her, make loads of noise. Ah! Ah!
Yeah, yeah.
And just never let her get very close. Like, the only other way I see it going is if Holly decides that she wants to, if she wants to grapple with Ketlin Vieira and hold her up against the fence, kind of like what she did against Raquel Pennington. I don't know. I think Ketlin Vieira, if this fight went on forever and there was no rules or time limits or anything, I think Ketlin Vieira gets to her eventually. But I think over 25 minutes, this is what Holly Holm does.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. I think Holly's going to be smart enough to not stay in the range that Ketlin wants her to be in.
Yeah.
And just if she can avoid that and pick her off, because Ketlin's, she's quite like marching down, like she's quite tucked up. She doesn't, she's not very explosive. So if Holly's just in and out, like picking her off, and she can do that, like you said, over 25 minutes, I could just see it going like that.
Yeah.
Unless Ketlin just like rushes her and gets her to the ground, like the Zingano fight.
Mm. I mean, she has got good grappling, Vera. Yeah. She has got good grappling, but then she's also been nullified on the ground against Konitskaya. So I wouldn't put it past Holly Holm to be able to do that to her. I just don't think it'd be a very good use of energy for her. I think the smart thing for Holm to do, southpaw the orthodox, move away from her, keep her on the end of that side kick, and then try and walk her onto the head kick that she got to, was it Betch Kohei? She knocked her out of that. I could see her working that, but then I feel like Ketlin Vera is going to have better footwork than Aldana did. Like, Aldana did not want to at any point step across and cut her off and walk onto that high kick. So she never was able to control her. She always basically chased her in circles around the cage, didn't she? And that worked perfectly for Holm, because she's not going to step outside of herself. She's not going to take any risks that she don't need to take. Like, why would she? And, you know, at this point in her career, she's each individual fight, I mean, it's the same for everybody, but even more so, I think, when you're at Holly Holm's stage, when you've already been the champion, she's 40 years old now, you know what I mean? She's not fighting consistently either. I mean, her last fight was Irene Aldana. A couple of years has passed since then almost. That was October of 2020. She's not going to take any risks here.
No.
If Holly's smart, she's a smart fighter, she's a veteran and a champion, I think she's going to play this one very, very cautiously. And I think she's going to try and nullify Vera over a decision and keep herself in line for a shot at the title. You know, especially now everything's shifted at the top of the division with Peña winning the belt. You could quite easily see Holly Holm stepping back fighting her.
I think she is, like, despite, you know, the stage she's at in the career, she's 100% looking to get back to that, like, title shot contention.
Yeah.
And, I think she's just too smart. Unless Ketlin, like, is as smart and, like, really cuts her off and, like, really closes that distance and really puts it on her. But, yeah, like you said, I just think Holly's just too smart and wily to not get caught in that trap.
Yeah. And this is five rounds as well, which doesn't necessarily suit Ketlin Vieira. I mean, she's not had many five rounders. Aside from that win that she's coming off over Misha Tate, I think that was her first five rounder. By comparison, Holly Holm is almost always five round fights, and she's winning decisions over five rounds as well. I think to beat Holly Holm, you've got to be aggressive at closing distance, and you've got to hit her and hurt her. And I think there are very, very few fighters that can do that. I mean, Nunes being one of the few. Like, even Durandamy wasn't able to really get to her and hurt her as such. Mm. You know, she was able to manage that distance against one of the best strikers in the sport. I feel like Ketlin Vera is going to be very, very susceptible for that side kick.
Yeah.
Side kick to the midsection, side kick to the lead leg. She's going to be frustrated. She's going to be trying to cut her off, trying to walk her down, and then Holm's going to throw that high kick, and then she's going to run that way. And then Vera's going to circle back and try and cut her down. She's going to get hit with a side kick. Then she's going to chase her down, then get hit with a head kick, and I could see that happening.
Yeah.
And then as soon as Vera rushes in to try and close distance, Holm's going to grab her, tie her up, turn her against the fence and hold her there, good head position.
Yeah. And Ketlin's a little bit reckless at times, like rushing in. I can see her even getting catching her with like a high kick, head kick or something like that.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I do think it's Holly's fight to lose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Holly by decision.
Yeah,
I'd be surprised if she's able to stop her on the ground or on the feet, but I could see her completely nullifying her all the way through the fight. I really can.
Yeah, same.
We've got a week off next week, haven't we?
I think so. Because the next pay-per-view is Tashira Prochazka.
Oh, yeah. I'm starting my playlist on that in the next couple of days.
Get that breakdown ready.
Yeah.
Oh, no, sorry. It's... we don't have a break. Oh, no, we do. Sorry. The next fight, the next card back is Volkov-Rosenstreich.
Okay.
And that's on June the 4th.
Right. And then the pay-per-view's after that.
And then the pay-per-view to Shira Prochazka. And then there's not a break. Oh, there's a break after Qatar Emmett and then Adesanya Cannonier.
Jeez.
In July.
The year just rolls through if you try and keep up with the UFC, doesn't it?
There's a few more breaks this time of year, though, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they've got International Fight Week coming up soon, aren't they? Start of July.
Yeah, that'll be...
the IMAF tournament going on the same weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Should be a good one.
Yeah, it is a good card this week. Like, despite there's only, like, not as many fights on, but there's some really good fights, like, in the prelims, like Martinez, Morales.
For sure. So what's your pick? What's your fight of the night pick?
I think that one.
I think Martinez,
Vince Morales, yeah.
So, okay, so then if that's the fight of the night between Martinez and Morales, who gets performance of the night?
Chidi and Chicano.
I think so too. I think Chicano is going to get another fantastic stoppage.
Yeah.
I like Todorovic, but he's just holes in his game, in his striking game, that someone like Chicano is going to, he's going to have seen it already. He'll probably know what he's going to try and hit him with now, just like he did against Barrio. He's like, okay, when he does this, his hit goes in this direction. I'm going to catch him with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, all right. Well, quick shout out to our sponsors before we leave you today. Xbrain, xbrain.co.uk. Go and check them out. If you use the code Outlaw, you'll get 20% off everything on their site, and they've got all kinds of good stuff. This is stashed here, ready for my workout later. This is my favorite pre-workout right now, the Neuroptimax. So Neuroptimax Sport, and you've also got Neuroptimax Pro, which is the powdered one. They're both amazing. They really are fantastic. Best pre-workout I've ever used. You can get that from Xbrain. You can get all of Xbrain's products. You can get all of Onnit's products as well. So if you want Alpha Brain or New Mood or whatever else from Onnit, get it from Xbrain, then it will save you the whole shipping from the US, etc. And you'll get your 20% off with the code Outlaw. And our friends at Canacarts, I've had this all the whole show around my neck, and I've not had a little bit of a...
Yeah, it's super nice, really smooth. It's the nicest vape I've ever had.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. It's lovely. This is Skittles, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Really, really good stuff. Anyway, canacarts.uk, give them a follow on Instagram. Check out their website, and you will get £5 off your order if you use the code OutlawCBD. Definitely worth checking out. I mean, as far as vape pens go, I've never had one that tastes as nice or pulls as smooth as this one.
Yeah.
And they're cool people, so go and give them some support. All right, I think that's everything, isn't it, Jamie? Bit of a shorter one today.
Yeah.
All right. Catch you next time. Nice one.
Take care.